You are listening to the Small Screen Podcast, part of the Invasion Radio Podcast Network. For pop culture and movie chat, check out the Popcast Podcast. And for insight on the hottest music, listen to the speaker box below. You can find all of the Invasion Radio podcasts at screeninvasion.com.
Hi, and welcome to the Small Screen Podcast, episode 47. I'm here. After a week break, I guess, last week, Marcos and Catherine did a Sons of Anarchy-focused episode. But this week, it's me again,
Yay.
Crystal Bailey. Yeah, excited. I'm Crystal Bailey, writer at Screen Invasion, and I'm here with Marcos.
Hi, everyone. I'm Marcos Canales from smallscreenhappenings.com, television.com, screeninvasion.com, all these .coms.
And so this is the Small Screen Podcast. Last week's was an episode, a single TV show focused episode, all about Sons of Anarchy, but this week we're kind of going back to our normal format of news and just general TV overall. And the biggest news this week have been all the awards. So first, I just really quickly want to go through the AFI top TV shows of 2012 list. In case you hadn't heard, they picked American Horror Story, Breaking Bad, Game Change, Game of Thrones, Girls, Homeland, Louie, Mad Men, Modern Family, and The Walking Dead. All of these are great shows. I pretty much really agree with this list. I watch a good portion, and the others that I don't watch obviously are critically acclaimed. I am kind of surprised by two things. One, I'm surprised Modern Family is still on there, and also that it's the only network show, I believe. Everything else is cable, basic and premium. But I'm kind of surprised it's on there because this season in 2012 wasn't the strongest, but still funny. So yeah, the one show that I think should be on this list that isn't is Parks and Rec. I think it was the best show of 2012. It was my favorite show of 2012. Both last season's arc with the campaign, and then also this season juggling between Washington, D.C. and Pawnee. They handled that transition really well, and it was still really funny. So I would just switch out Modern Family for Parks and Rec on this list. But Marcos, what do you think of the AFI list? Is there anything you would change?
Honestly, it's hard to argue with this list. I do think, for the most part, AFI did a pretty good job at picking the 10 shows that, it's debatable which ones were, if they truly were the best. But I think in terms of the general consensus, these are probably 10 of the better programs that did air in 2012. That said, I concur with everything that you said about the debate between Modern Family and Parks and Recreation. I didn't love Parks and Rec as much as you did, but I think when you look at those two shows and compare them, Parks and Rec is so far ahead of Modern Family at this point that it was a little bit, not surprising, but it was a little bit annoying that Parks and Recreation still does not get the love from these types of awarding bodies. Whereas Modern Family is just such a no-brainer at this point that it has to be included in pretty much every list or every awards nomination category. And it's just getting a little bit tiresome because I've been pretty open and honest in terms of my feelings about Modern Family recently, and especially this current season has really just been falling short of my expectations, where at this point I'm just watching out of habit and I really don't find it all that funny anymore. And the things that I used to like about it are now trying to push me away, like the Dunphys. Like, Claire's getting to that point where I really can't take too much of her. I'm not happy with what they did with Haley this season and things like that. So, I'll take a less than stellar season of Parks and Recreation over a mediocre Modern Family any day of the week. So that's probably the only big change I would suggest. But I think the more surprising thing, in a good way at least, for me when I looked at this list, is how genre shows were actually well represented. I mean, you have American Horror Story, you have Game of Thrones, you have The Walking Dead, three very good shows, but they're not necessarily similar to what has been getting all of the accolades the last couple of years, like Mad Men and Breaking Bad, which are also on this list. But it's encouraging to see that some entities are willing to acknowledge that just because a show is a genre doesn't necessarily mean it's lesser quality than a Mad Men and all the other shows that get all the praise. So I was pleasantly surprised about that.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good point. I'm always pro genre, so it is nice to see them get some much deserved recognition.
And also, like, Girls and Louie, which I think have been the critical darlings in terms of the comedy side. It's nice to see them get recognized as well, just because it's easy to be cynical and say, well, certain organizations don't care about these small little shows on HBO and FX, but obviously they've done something right in order to be added to such a prestigious list, so good for them as well.
Awesome. And then the big awards this past week were the Golden Globe nominations. You can see the full list online. There'll be a link in the post if you're listening. It'll be on Screen Invasion, so I won't go through every category. That would take far too long. But there are a few categories we want to highlight and talk about. So the first one is the best comedy or musical series. And the nominees are The Big Bang Theory, Episodes, Girls, Modern Family, and Smash. Obviously, I think the biggest shocker here is that Smash was nominated. It had a really strong pilot, but after that, the whole rest of its season order, people just soured on it. It didn't live up to the potential of the pilot. I mean, I still watched and enjoyed it, but it definitely, I don't think was award worthy by any means. So yeah, that was a big surprise to see it included among these shows. What do you think about the inclusion of Smash?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to justify Smash being on this list, but then when you think about it, this is just what the Golden Globes do. I mean, everyone knows that the Hollywood foreign press is known for just wanting to throw a big party and getting as many stars in one room as possible, and they love their showbiz-centric TV shows, and that's why things like Episodes always gets nominated by this governing body. So when you really look at it, a show about a Broadway musical seems like it could be right up the Golden Globes' alley. It's just the fact that they decided to award it over so many other deserving shows, like a Parks and Rec, like we've already talked about, just seems laughably bad. But, it is what it is. This is just the Golden Globes being the Golden Globes.
Yeah, I know that's true. I mean, with their TV and movie categories, it's always a little suspect because they always have, that handful of nominees that are just kind of out of left field and aren't really included in any other nominating boards picks. So it smashes that for this one.
Yeah, this is also the people who decided Hayden Panettiere is one of the best supporting actress performances this year, which, I like Nashville enough, and we'll probably talk a little bit about that later, but yeah, that's a tough pill to swallow as well. So just the only thing you can expect from the Golden Globe nominations is stuff like this, is how crazy and silly they're going to be, so.
Very true.
But I think one of the things that was even sillier than Smash being added to the comedy or musical was the fact that Mad Men was left off the drama series, and those nominees are Breaking Bad, Boardwalk Empire, Downton Abbey, Homeland, and The Newsroom. Now, to be fair, I didn't watch The Newsroom, so I can't objectively say that it was better or worthy of this nomination, but any list that doesn't have Mad Men on it just looks weird to me. And I was still new to Mad Men this season. This was the first time I really watched it in depth. And I thought it was good, you know, not great, but I still think it was probably better than the majority of the stuff that's out there. So I was a little bit taken aback by the fact that for some reason the Golden Globes decided that Newsroom is better or more worthy than Mad Men. And it kind of goes back to what we talked about. I mean, when you have a Jeff Daniels, who's a bona fide movie star, headlining an Aaron Sorkin show, it's kind of hard for some for the Hollywood Foreign Press to overlook that, especially when they've shown some love to Mad Men in the past. But, yeah, it's still just one of those wonky things that doesn't quite click in my head. I mean, you're the Mad Men expert. I mean, we've talked a little bit about this past season in terms of its quality, but do you think it dipped enough for it to be left off this list?
Honestly, I think it should be on this list. I don't watch The Newsroom. I swear Homeland is on my watch, my to-watch list. But, you know, like you said, it was not the best season of Mad Men, but it was still better than the vast majority of other television out there. I mean, a weak season of Mad Men is still really strong. Mm-hmm. But I guess maybe the disparity, or if they didn't like the... Because this was I feel like we've talked about it before when the season ended, like it was kind of a shift in terms of pacing and tone a little for Mad Men. So if they, the Hollywood Foreign Press Board voters, really did not like that new direction, I could see them souring on the show. I'm just surprised that they thought it wasn't enough to even be in the nominees.
Yeah, it just doesn't look right, like I said. I mean, it should, regardless if I love that show or not, it should probably be, it should always be nominated for Best Drama no matter what. Even if it's the worst season it ever had, like we've already said, I mean, you put that up to pretty much anything else and it's probably going to lap it. So, who knows, but we'll say it again. It's the Golden Globes being the Golden Globes.
I mean, at the very least, Jon Hamm is nominated. And so Mad Men's somewhere in this list of nominees being recognized, but not enough. It should be in, I think, Best Drama Series.
Definitely.
And then, the other category I want to talk about was the comedy actress category. And the nominees for this one were Tina Fey for 30 Rock, Zooey Deschanel for New Girl, Lena Dunham for Girls, Julia Louis-Dreyfus for Veep, and Amy Poehler for Parks and Rec. So I'm glad Parks and Rec is getting some kind of recognition here, but I just thought it was interesting that this category is pretty much identical to the Emmy nominees that came out earlier this year for the last season. So I do agree with all these picks. I just thought that was interesting that, you know, how we always talk about how we were just talking about how they kind of throw in some kind of curveball for the Golden Globes. This one actually was consistent with other awards and I think a good representation of the talent out there.
Yeah, I pretty much agree. And I was trying to think of who could have been included on this list instead of one of these nominated actresses. And honestly, no one really came to mind. I mean, there had been some whispers that maybe someone like Mindy Kaling could have broken in, or even a Dakota Johnson from Ben and Kate. And while I like Dakota Johnson's performance, I mean, it's still not on par with what these women bring on a weekly basis. And especially if Fox could only pick one actress, it kind of makes sense that they're going to put all their muscle behind Zooey Deschanel, since she's the base of their new comedy brand. You know, these are all good performances on all shows that, for the most part, I appreciate, so really can't complain too much. But sticking with acting, the last category we quickly wanted to talk about is supporting actor in a TV series, movie, or miniseries, and those nominees are Max Greenfield for New Girl, Ed Harris from Game Change, Danny Houston from Magic City, Mandy Patinkin from Homeland, and Eric Stonestreet from Modern Family. And it's been well documented that mashing up all the supporting categories can kind of create a cluster frick, and that's kind of what you get right here, because it's kind of hard to objectively compare Max Greenfield as Schmidt with Mandy Patinkin as Saul on Homeland. And the same could be said, like, Ed Harris on a TV movie, which isn't really, he doesn't have the opportunity to really have a span of 10 to 20 some episodes to establish a character. He has that small window to sell his craft. So having them all together is kind of a weird thing that the Hollywood Foreign Press does. That said, I mean, it's a pretty decent field. I mean, the thing that I would say I wasn't as enamored with had this been, say, last year, is Max Greenfield's inclusion. Not to say that Schmidt's not a funny character and he doesn't do a good job with it, but at this point, Jake Johnson is New Girl for me. Like, he's the best character on that show, and he's the funniest cast member, and Schmidt's kind of worn off a little bit, and he's not quite where he used to be, whereas now Nick makes me laugh consistently, whereas Schmidt sometimes makes me cringe a little bit more than I'd like. So if a New Girl cast member was going to be in this category, I much would have preferred Jake Johnson over Max Greenfield. That said, I understand why he's in this category.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, in this first season, Schmidt was a bigger highlight. He was really funny, and his relationship with Cece was great. And all of his like douchebagisms and work stuff was really funny and really hitting, all its marks. But this season, Nick is the best of the roommates. And even Winston has stepped up a little. I really liked him in the last episode with all the Christmas parties and the cranberry in his ear and all that stuff. So yeah, it's no longer like the Schmidt show, and the other actors have really stepped up. So I am surprised that it's him over Jake Johnson for that show.
Yep.
But yeah, so that pretty much wraps up our news. And so since it's like the holidays, there's not TV on every day. You know, things are wrapping up, winter finales are happening. So instead of doing what we're watching, we decided we're gonna do like a mid-season rundown, going through like the best or the worst, or you know, our thoughts on a few new shows and a few returning shows. So to kick it off, one of the new shows I really want to talk about, and which we've talked about a good amount already, I think, is Go On, the Matthew Perry show on NBC. You know, I said it early, I think early on, and it just consistently stayed at such a great level that this was my favorite of the new shows. It balanced the seriousness of the grief from losing his wife and the grief group and everybody's different problems, but it didn't wallow in that, and it was able to find the balance between that and the humor and like the crazy antics of some of these people, and that sometimes like are born from their grief. They have these crazy antics and stuff. So I just wanted to highlight that as probably like my favorite show of the whole batch of new shows. And I know I've talked about how much I liked it before, and you talked about it before. Do you still like it? What were your thoughts as the season or the first half of its first season wrapped?
Yeah, I still think that it's up there in terms of one of the better new shows, and I'm still enjoying it for the most part. I will say that towards the end of this initial run, it started to lose a little bit of steam for me, because I started to notice whenever the rest of the ensemble had their own little side stories, I wasn't as engaged as I would have liked to be. Like, for example, there is the one where Yolanda and Sonia were trying to sabotage Wyatt's proposal to Lauren, and that didn't quite work. And I think Mr. K is one of those characters that he's good on the peripherals, but don't put him front and center. So whenever he gets the spotlight, it just doesn't quite work for me as much as I would have liked. But any time that Ryan has center stage and it really does focus on him and interacting with the ensemble, I think it works so much better, especially him and Anne. I think those two characters have just struck the right chord, because you can tell they genuinely care about each other, but they also love giving each other crap, and that's just the type of relationship that works well on this type of TV show. So when they stray away from Ryan, it sometimes loses a little bit of its luster. And I'm probably one of the few people who kind of enjoys the workplace end of things a little bit more than the group counseling side of things. So I like it when Steven's involved, and I like it when Carrie's involved. And I'm really been upset that she's been underutilized this season, because I thought from the very beginning that Carrie was going to play a bigger role than she has, and she barely makes it in episodes now. And if she does, she's just pretty much there for Steven and Ryan to joke on and cut her down and stuff like that. So I've been kind of disappointed with that. All that said, though, it's still a show that makes me laugh more often than not, and especially in a crop of shows that hasn't been the strongest, it definitely rose to the top, and I'm excited that it's doing so well, and I'm hoping that it's able to keep that momentum enough to end strongly and hopefully get another season from NBC, which I think it's a pretty safe bet to say it probably will get renewed. You never know, but NBC would be crazy to cancel a show like Go On, especially when all of their other shows are bowing out or not doing as well. So again, safe bet. You never know, but I'm excited for the possibility of a second season. So
yeah, me too. And you know, actually, I do, like, I agree with you on the workplace stuff. I think that's actually a lot stronger than I feel people give it credit for. Because, I mean, the group stuff is obviously the focus, and that's, like, where his grief and everything, like, gets, like, center stage, and his progress, mental progress and all that stuff. But his work stuff has been really great with the radio, like, them working in the radio station, and also Carrie, the assistant, while she's underutilized, the few parts where she's been able to like shine, where she was like trying to help him at the volleyball game.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. And the episode where he was like inappropriately trying to be her friend and have like latch onto her social life. I thought that was great. So yeah, I'm with you, and I'm hoping she gets a little bit more interaction, you know, in the episodes to come, and hopefully next season should that occur as well.
Yeah, and the thing is, I understand why they maybe don't focus on that as much, because a big selling point for the show is how he's reacting to these new people in his life, but we really don't see a ton of his previous life. Like, we've seen a few flashbacks with his wife and kind of got an idea what their relationship was like, and we've seen bits and pieces with Steven and Carrie, but I definitely think that's a side of his character and his persona that we haven't been privy to, and I want more of that. And, you know, and not to say that it should shortchange the group therapy stuff, but there's a whole other Ryan that we haven't met yet, because we don't know quite how he was before these events started, and I'd like to see a little bit more of that. But regardless, as long as they make me laugh, I'm going to be happy with it. But yeah, give me more Carrie, and I'll definitely love it a lot more.
That pretty much wraps up my thoughts on Go On. The other new show I wanted to briefly talk about is The Mindy Project, which I think is improving. You know, like, I really liked the pilot, you know, enough to get me to tune in. I, of course, you know, want to support women-run shows, especially women of color shows, because, you know, it's really underrepresented in the media. So, of course, I'm going to watch it and root for it. But it's a show that the parts are way better than the whole. Because, like, I laugh at jokes in the show. I enjoy the characters and some of their interactions and stuff. But when looking at it as an entire episode, or looking at it as the entire, like, series so far, it's really, like, it hasn't found its voice yet. It hasn't hit its groove. It's got, like, all these great parts. Like, I really like Danny and other, like, Doctor. I really like Mindy with her boyfriend and, like, their interactions and stuff. And, like, I like the jokes and the male nurse and everything. But then somehow when you put it all together, it's just not working. So, I mean, we've talked about their casting changes and how they're kind of streamlining some of it. They wrote out Stephen Tobolowsky, the Schulman of Schulman and Associates, He retired. They're getting rid of the sexy nurse assistant girl, and they are cutting down on Anna Camp, the best friend storyline. And if you watched the last episode, spoiler alert if you didn't or if you care, then the boyfriend is now out of the picture as well. So they've really cut down on some of the components. So hopefully, you know, when it comes back after the hiatus and, like, they've been able to, like, fine-tune it some things and move some parts around, hopefully, like, you can get it to all mesh together. Because I do like it enough to keep me watching every week, and I do laugh. It's just not adding up, which is disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty honest about my thoughts about the mini project on the podcast before. But to hear that it's improving, I mean, that's what I was looking for in terms of helping me decide whether I'm going to come back or not. And to be honest, the fact that the boyfriend's no longer in the picture, that might be enough because I never liked him. He was just an annoying character to begin with. But I guess
he was annoying, but I kind of liked the joke that they went with it and how he was annoying. And it paid off because he ended up being a jerk the whole time and was cheating. Spoiler alert.
See, and I mean, you know, and I've talked about this a little bit before as well, like, this whole genre of comedy where people are just being bad to each other and how that can be funny sometimes, I don't always quite get that, but that's just kind of an aside. I guess the biggest question I have for you, and it's, I guess, somewhat related to what I just talked about, my biggest issue with the show was always Mindy herself. Like, I never thought that she was an interesting enough character to headline this kind of show. I didn't feel like she was someone I wanted to root for. And it sounds like maybe they've come up with a way to get people to sympathize with her. But do you feel like over the last couple episodes, she's grown into that character who can be somewhat more likable and someone we want to see succeed? Or is she still a very self-centered person who can be grating at times?
I mean, she's still a little grating, to be honest, because this is, it's Mindy Kaling, and that's the type of character that she's written about herself, you know, kind of, like, obnoxious and into fashion and, you know, kind of, like, a central crux of her character is the hopeless romantic stuff, which some people find annoying just on its own, regardless of who that is. But I do think they've made improvements to make her a little bit more sympathetic, to make her a little bit more relatable by having her, you know, now with the boyfriend and how that story turned out. And then there was also the storyline of once Stephen Tobolowsky, the showman, left, like, the way that the three remaining doctors kind of, like, played each other to see who was going to be the new boss and stuff. Like, that was, I thought, a good character episode in trying to get her to be more likable and someone you kind of understand where she's coming from more. Mm-hmm. And she's definitely had some more strong character moments where you root for her, where you see why she is somebody that you should root for and want her to find love eventually.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, there's hope and there's potential there. Like, this first half of the season, like I said, was rocky and not all that great, but I do think it's going to get better now that they've, you know, had some time to work out some kinks.
Okay. Well, I'll probably check back with you again in January to hear if it has maybe seized more of its potential, and maybe that'll give me a kick in the pants to give it another shot. But right now, still kind of iffy on it, but I'm still intrigued enough by Mindy Kaling alone to give her a second chance. So I'm definitely
open to that. And I mean, like, this isn't the type of show that you'll need to catch up on, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Once it gets good, you can just start watching from there. So I'll definitely be keeping everybody posted on its progress because I do want it to succeed, and I'm really hoping it, you know, hits that groove sooner rather than later or too late.
Very cool. The new show that I wanted to quickly talk about is ABC's Nashville. And the main reason why I wanted to talk about it is because I've kind of completely turned around on this show. A few episodes ago, I talked about how it was one of the most disappointing new shows for me. because it didn't quite focus on the aspects that drew me in initially. And it focused too much on love triangles and stupid politics and things like that. And to be fair, that's still all a part of what the show is about. But the last few episodes have really been doubling down and focusing on the music side of things. We've seen Reyna and Juliet actually sit down and write a song together and perform it together. And we're starting to see all of the wheels turn in terms of this big tour and how it's all kind of falling into place for them to actually team up and go on tour together and save their record label and save themselves and stuff like that. There have been scenes with Reyna's new producer partner, which I think has been really interesting to watch. And the whole creative process that the show has been tapping into the last couple of episodes have reinvigorated my enjoyment for this show. And I do like the fact that it still knows what it is for the most part. It still knows that it's going to be a nighttime soap. So we still have some of those crazier elements like Juliet and her Christian boyfriend, quarterback, and how they are trying to, you know, help each other's images while sometimes hurting them, and the pitfalls of fame and all of that stuff is kind of, it's a little bit out there, but it's still somewhat enjoyable to watch. And kind of shifting the love triangle focus away from Deacon, Reyna, and Juliet to Hunter, or not Hunter, what's his name, Gunner, Scarlet, and Avery. Like, I think that was a good move because I just think that type of story works better with that type of cast and that group of characters versus the older characters. I just think that's something that meshes a little bit well. Their politics stuff is still kind of stupid, and I still don't really care for any of that, especially now that Carlisle has released these pictures into the world and slinging mud and all that stuff that just isn't really interesting. But the fact that it somehow course-corrected over the last few weeks to give me at least what I've been looking for while still maintaining some of those seeds of drama that started it off, I think has been a good move in my opinion, and it definitely has changed my opinion and my thoughts on this show, and I'm more excited now to keep going with it than I was about a month and a half ago. So are you still watching Nashville? What are your thoughts on this first half of the season?
I'm actually a few episodes behind. The last one I watched was the first date between Hayden Panettiere and the football player. So I am glad to hear that the last couple episodes, you know, turned your opinion around, because I think part of the reason I fell behind was because I was losing interest in some of the storylines. So after hearing your thoughts on it, I'll definitely try to catch up on that over the break.
Well, sorry for the spoilers then. Had I known.
It's fine. I mean, I would be more upset if it were a genre show with all the spoilers, you know, with the big plots and twists and turns and stuff, but this is a drama, you know, stuff's gonna happen, and it's fine.
Cool. Well, thank you for not taking me to task for that.
If I had had a problem, I would have, like, stopped or been like, la 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 with my hands over my ears, and would have made a big deal about it if I were bothered.
Cool. The next show I want to talk about, though, is one I pretty sure you've cut ties with as well. And that's NBC's The New Normal. And the reason why I wanted to bring it up is because in a lot of ways my thoughts about this show are very similar to how you feel about The Mindy Project. It was a show that I had a lot of enthusiasm for early on, and I had high hopes for, and it never quite fulfilled what I was wanting from it. And maybe that's because, again, I'm a mindless drone of Ryan Murphy's, and I will consume anything he throws at me. But even when I take the Ryan Murphy goggles off, it's still a show that has so many flaws, and it's not as good as it could be, and it can be very frustrating to watch it sometimes. But there are still small little things that keep me entertained and keep me going and pushing forward and invested. You know, one of the earliest criticisms about this show is it's a Ryan Murphy show, which was one of the things I got so tired of during pilot season, because it's shorthand for, you know, crazy and off the wall and blah, blah, blah. And that's what it is. And once I kind of embraced that, I think I started to come around a little bit more to it, because it is a very political show. Obviously, just the subject matter alone and Ryan Murphy's background and what he's passionate about, you knew it was going to be very preachy. But the thing is, when he lays off of that and he steps off the soapbox and it focuses on actual family stuff and becoming fathers and having a blended family and some of the joys and pains that come along with that, I think that's when it really starts to shine. And it has been showing some of those colors a little bit more than initially. Like, I mean, starting off, it was pretty much all about the racist grandmother character saying totally inappropriate things and offending everybody, and the two super gays coming to the rescue of the liberals and speaking their mind for justice and all that stuff, which is all well and good, but after a while, that kind of starts getting old. And the fact that it's starting to actually look at these people as a family unit and stopping some of those messages that Ryan Murphy and Ali Adler love to put out there, I think that that's a show that I'm willing to give more chances to and willing to give more time to develop. And you know, I'm going to expect some of those, you know, hot button issue moments, but as long as I feel like it's intermingled with the heart that can come along with this kind of show, I think that'll speak better for this type of program. And Andrew Rannells, who plays the Brian character, he was somewhat irritating at the beginning of the show, but I think that the writers really calibrated him in a good way to where he's still over the top and dramatic and a diva, but he is also the heart of the show, and I think it works really well. And there's some other outlying characters that I wish they'd do better with, but what it comes down to is if he's still able to maintain that fine balance between, you know, again, being on a soapbox and being a human being, and it makes me laugh and think and stuff like that. I'm going to give the new normal a lot of rope because that's just what I do with Ryan Murphy and his shows. But it's still not as great as I was hoping it would be, but it's not as horrible as a lot of people probably thought it would end up being. But, you know, first seasons tend to be like that when it comes to this guy. So season two, if it does get a season two, could be a complete mess and horrible. But right now, there's still enough there to keep me hopeful.
Cool. I mean, I don't really have much to add because, like you said, I cut ties fairly early on because it was just a little too preachy for me. I mean, it's a comedy. I wanted to laugh. I didn't want to be lectured, especially when I agree with so much of what he's like, saying. So I was like, "You're preaching to the choir." But if you're enjoying it, you're enjoying
Yep.
it.
Yep.
But yeah. So that is all of the new shows that we wanted to run through. As far as returning shows, the only one I want to highlight is The Walking Dead, which we've talked about plenty on this podcast, I believe. I mean, if you followed while we were talking about season two, I pretty much was almost ready to give up on the show. It took so long to get to the barn with Sophia, like all of the stuff with Shane. I just was not enjoying that season. It was way too much talking and talking and talking about the same stuff. I don't mind talking as long as it's, forward progression and the story and all that stuff. But this was the same arguments, the same character beats, and it was just really frustrating. And so season three came out, and with the new showrunner, with the new storyline of the prison and Michonne and the governor and all that stuff. And this season pretty much knocked my socks off. It was a complete 180 for me. Like, I went from almost giving up on the show to where it was the show I would look forward to probably most every week. I just thought it was such a turnaround. They handled the action and the gore and guts, really well, which they always did. But now it felt like the gore and the guts was also tied to character moments, and they had these discussions and looks and stuff that actually moved the story forward more than the endless conversations that Lori and Shane and Rick had for so much of season two. So yeah, I just want to commend The Walking Dead for such a change, and I really enjoyed this last season, and I hope they can keep the momentum going when it comes back in spring.
Yeah, I pretty much agree. I mean, I was a little bit more forgiving towards season two than you were, because I was never really to that point where I was ready to cut bait completely. But I completely agree with you 100% about it rebounding nicely this year. And, I mean, it wasn't perfect by any means. I mean, there were still little things here and there that were definite drawbacks. I think that, for the most part, they whiffed on the Governor and Michonne's characters, at least in these first couple episodes. But they just wrapped up that first half of the season, so I'm hoping that they're able to figure out those characters a little bit more before they come back in January. I'm not quite sure how far along they are in production, or in February, excuse me. But those are definitely some areas that I can see some improvements being needed. But holistically, yeah, Walking Dead has really been one of the better shows this year, especially when you compare it to where it was last year. So kudos to Glenn Mazzara and his staff, and Kirkman and everyone behind the scenes who have been able to figure out what wasn't working and flipping the script and making it one of the more entertaining shows on television today.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, what returning shows did you want to talk about?
There are two shows that I wanted to bring up, mostly because they have the same. I have the same issues with them, and they are New Girl and The Vampire Diaries.
And very different shows.
Very different shows, but the reason why I wanted to talk about them is because they're shows that I've enjoyed and I love, but so far this season they've just slipped a little bit, in my opinion, for very similar reasons. And I guess what it comes down to is, especially in terms of the New Girl, I no longer watch for Jess. Like I talked about earlier, Nick is the show for me, and he's the main reason I'm tuning in and week out. And I think that's good that they're able to solidify the ensemble and make it truly a group effort where it doesn't live or die based on Jess. But in some way, she's just, as a character this season, has become so much of a mess that watching her sometimes is just frustrating, because either she's crying in a job interview or she's all this crazy stuff that's come along with her being fired, which I understand. I get that. It's just I don't want to necessarily watch that, especially when it was a string of like three or four episodes where Jess was in that mode nonstop, you know, and that was somewhat off-putting for a little while. And I do think towards the end of this first part of season two, they were able to show me signs of her old character that I enjoyed last season, but like I said, at that point I was kind of done with her anyway, and so I don't know quite know how that's going to play when it comes back in 2013, but it's just one of those situations where the main character is no longer a draw, but thankfully there's other things around her that are keeping me going. How do you feel this first part of the season's been going for you in terms of New Girl?
I mean, I don't think this first half has been like as strong as season one, but there have been some great episodes. Like, I really enjoyed Schmidt's storyline with his boss, and like I thought like there are some really funny moments there. I'm really glad they've been able to bring Winston into more and make him like a real person and a real mm-hmm. character, which they definitely struggled with last season. So yeah, I mean, I'm still enjoying it. I still think it's funny, but I kind of do agree with you that, you know, Jess isn't as, I don't know if likable is the right word, or like her storylines this season just haven't been as great because of the new direction with her being unemployed and unemployed. They definitely faltered there, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I, for the most part, I agree with you. I mean, there have been very funny episodes, but when I take a step back and figure out why they were funny, very rarely does it have anything to do with Jess. Again, it has more to do with the guys. And Schmidt, I mean, you know, I said a little bit earlier, like, he's kind of the shine has come off him a little bit, in my opinion. Him and CeCe, I'm not loving. You know, I've never really quite cared, I guess, about them as a couple. So the fact that he's been really been focusing on that, haven't been loving it, but I can take it. And I agree with you on Winston, but even then, all of the greatest Winston moments are all tied to Nick. So, you know, it's still a funny show. It's still something I enjoy watching. It's just one of those situations where, you know, how I feel about the main character does carry a lot of weight. And that's why, at least when it comes to Tuesday nights, it's not even, like, second or third on my list to watch anymore. It's dropped below even, like, say, Raising Hope at this point. I'm still going to watch it, but I'm not going to jump at new episodes as quickly as I had in the past because of where they've taken Jess as a character. But again, Nick's saving the show, and as long as Jake Johnson's doing what he's doing, I'm happy. And I've actually enjoyed the fact that they're giving him outside interests and outside love interests and things like that. I think so far Olivia Munn's been doing well on the show. I think she's meshing well with the cast. I was a little bit upset, though, that you have Olivia Munn and David Walton in the same episode, and they don't even acknowledge Perfect Couples. Like, come on! That was a major fail on New Girl's part, but I'll get over it.
Well, I think we might have been the only people watching Perfect Couples.
And that's probably true, but come on! Even in the tag, like...
Love that. I would have loved if there had been a little inside joke or something, but... Different network, not enough people watched it, so.
I guess, but.
What can you do?
And then, I'm just going to say it, I hate Elena.
No, I don't get it.
I don't get her. You know, and I've never been the biggest Elena fan to begin with. I watched Vampire Diaries for so many other reasons, namely Caroline. And I love her so, so much this season. And the fact that her and Stefan are doing their own little thing and they're bonding over being the only two sensible people in Mystic Falls, even though maybe they're not so sensible. But just those two together, I eat that stuff up with a spoon. And I just love what they're doing with those two. And that's probably because I just do not like what they're doing with Elena this season. Because, you know... It's hard not to just see her as a stereotypical damsel in distress because her main function in my eyes is to get into trouble and for her to give Damon and Stefan some reason to save her. And I was hoping that the fact that she became a vampire would change things, and she's still putting herself in the same situations, causing this drama for the brothers, and they always have to swoop it and save her. And it's just so old at this point that I can't get behind her anymore. You know, and there are actual times where I want Jeremy to kill her.
Oh, that's terrible.
Because Jeremy and his whole Hunter thing, like, that's interesting stuff. Like, that's great. And there's so many plot elements that I'm loving this season on the Vampire Diaries. But they all revolve around this character that just I do not like. And it's really affecting my ability to watch the show and enjoy it as much as I'd have in the past. I'm not saying I don't like the show and that I hate it. I still really do enjoy The Vampire Diaries. But it's because of everything else that's going on around Elena. And don't even get me started on her and Damon and Sires and all this other stuff. So just wanted to get that off my chest once and for all.
I obviously completely disagree with you because, I mean, I like all those elements of the show outside of Elena. I am invested in this, like, love story between her, Damon, and Stefan. Almost blanked on his name for a second.
We know which team you're on.
Well, I think what makes Elena's character work and the love story work is because it's not just this girl who can't make up her mind anymore. Adding in the Sire element and everything, like, I think makes it more interesting because it's not the typical, like, Twilight storyline of, like, oh, I just like these two guys, but I don't know, which it kind of was, you know, in earlier seasons where she liked Stefan, she liked Damon, or she was, like, she liked Stefan, but she was drawn to Damon, and she didn't like how she was drawn to him. You know, like, that by having the sire element, have it be something that comes from, like, a supernatural connection, I think makes it more interesting. And the way, like, that it could play out with all of them now, with that sire bond and everything happening, I think adds a totally, like, fresh layer to a love story, a love triangle that was getting really stale. But that being said, you know, I do really like Caroline and Stefan, and I like the Jeremy story, and I even like the witchcraft story. Like, I'm really liking this season as a whole. Elena's not my favorite part of it, but she's by no means the worst element, I think. So I don't know. I see your point on where you're coming from on how she's kind of the damsel in distress, but at the same time, she's not Bella from Twilight. She's not completely useless. She's going out there and, you know, trying to be a vampire, trying to figure out stuff and not just waiting around for things to happen, which I think they very, very easily could have done because it's something that is traditionally done in, like, these love story, especially with, like, supernatural love stories like this.
You know, and that's all well and good. And I mean, okay, she's not useless. But it's just, it's frustrating that it just seems like it's taking her so much longer to get her act together. And it's just,
it's because of the sire bond.
No, it hasn't. Well, even then, like, first and foremost, the sire bond is just kind of ridiculous, but that's a whole other, that's a whole other issue. But I guess the reason why it's irking me more so than anything else is because, again, I'm looking at these two very different characters, and maybe it's unfair for me to compare her and Caroline all the time, but when Caroline became a vampire, I mean, that was a transition that just worked. It clicked. Like, she figured it out, and she became such a stronger character and so much more entertaining to watch. And I was hoping that the same thing was going to happen with Elena, but she's still, at the end of the day, trying to figure out how she feels about these two brothers. Again, getting herself into trouble to once again put their lives in danger to save hers. And at the end of the day, I don't see what they see in her. I don't get it. Stefan needs to be with Caroline, damn it. That's all I care about. That's all I care about anymore. Make it happen.
I would support that. And then Elena and Damon can all be together, and then it'd be perfect.
And then Jeremy can kill both of them. And then what we'll have is a show about Stefan and Caroline ruling Mystic Falls, and I'd be completely happy. And then Tyler can do his own thing. You know, but then there's Tyler and Klaus and all this other stuff, but still, whatever. Just, I've made my thoughts very clear at this point.
I mean, I would say that Tyler and Klaus, that probably is my least favorite storyline, more so than Elena's sire bond and the love triangle and trying to find the cure. Like, I don't know, I'm just not invested in that. I was kind of hoping that the end of last season would be the end of the originals.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't a huge fan of that storyline, but Klaus is still around, still hanging out.
And I don't even necessarily blame Klaus for it, or even Tyler. It's just the hybrid storyline itself was just, it felt half-baked from the beginning. Like, I never quite understood why Klaus wanted hybrids and what he's trying to do and what his end game is. And there were stretches there where I don't know why everyone hated Klaus and why they're still, like, it's very convoluted in some ways. But I agree with you for the most part that the whole hybrid stuff never quite worked and it still isn't working. And maybe it's because I just want Tyler out of the picture so Stefan can be with Caroline. That's, again, all I care about. But that, you know, there's still structural issues with that story.
Yeah, agreed. At least we can agree on that.
And again, I don't hate the show. I just hate Elena. So. fun stuff.
but yeah, so I guess that kind of wraps up the mid-season shows we wanted to talk about. It's the end of the fall season pretty much on TV. Like, there's only a week worth of shows, maybe, and then a bunch of Christmas specials. But is there anything in particular you're looking forward to?
Yeah, pretty slim pickings, but there are two big finales coming up that I'm excited for. One is going to be this Sunday, and that's going to be Showtime's Homeland, which has had a fairly bumpy outing this year. And a lot of people feel like this finale is going to make or break the series, which I'm not quite that dramatic. I still think it's been solid. But I do want to see if they're able to pull it off. And then on Tuesday night, it's going to be the finale of The Voice. The Season 3 winner will be crowned. And for the most part, I'm happy with the final three. I still think that the favorite got eliminated last week was a bad move on the show's part. But, you know, America votes, blah, blah, blah. I will say that even though I don't watch shows like American Idol, I can already tell that this show did it right compared to what Idol's done in the past. Because we don't have a white guy with a guitar winning it. So credit to The Voice for breaking that string. So what about you?
I mean, most of my shows have wrapped up. I got to catch up on the Vampire Diaries winter finale, which aired last night. But otherwise, I'm mainly just looking forward to the mid-season premieres of the new slate of shows, which we'll dig into in our first episode of 2013 when we kind of go through our picks on that. But yeah, other than that, just hanging out, watching some Christmas movies. No real TV highlights for me for now.
Sweet.
So that ends our show. That ends all of 2012. This is our last episode of the year. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Be sure to follow us on Twitter. You can follow all of the Invasion Radio podcasts at Invasion Radio on Twitter. You can follow Screen Invasion, the site, at Screen Invasion. And you can follow me personally at Crystal_Bailey.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Papa's2Cents.
Right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. And hope you tune in when we return in 2013.
Woo! Thanks.